Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
They like to comfort themselves with the thought that a competitive campaign will leave us divided and weak. But I've got news for them. A competitive primary does not divide us, it prepares us, and we will win.
It could work out that way or not, Mitt Romney, and there is still plenty of primary season left to go, like next Tuesday in Missouri, where Gingrich is not on the ballot and Santorum may try to make an unfiltered me versus Romney pitch. But now that we have completed phase one, the January sprint through four proven ground states, let's take a step back and see what we have learned about the candidates and the people. First, with Jennifer Rubin, author of the conservative Right Turn blog for The Washington Post. Welcome back to WNYC, Jennifer. Good morning.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again.
Do you think Romney's statement in that clip is correct about this bruising primary season strengthening him or whoever the nominee is to run against Obama?
I think in part, yes, if only because Newt Gingrich previewed many of the same attacks that he's going to see in the general election. So I think that did wake him up. I think it's going to help him prepare not only in terms of data points and talking points, but in terms of developing a message and a tone. And I do think that in every heated primary at the end, everyone swears that that will damage the party in the general election. And it really is not the case. We had a very hotly contested primary in 2008 on the Democratic side. We had a very hotly contested primary in 1980 between Ronald Reagan and the man he eventually chose as his vice president, who called his economic theory voodoo economics.
Right.
So I think in the moment, it seems that they're all at sixes and sevens. But I think that misinterpretation is actually amplified in the new media environment. If you looked at actual voters, as opposed to the people who are covering the voters last night, 65% of the voters, at least in Florida, said Mitt Romney would be an acceptable choice, an acceptable nominee. And that's when the primary is not over by a long shot, and there's still three other candidates contesting. Similarly, his positive ratings, at least among Republicans, is over 75% last night in Florida. So I think we've had a very unusual kind of atmosphere in which there's actually more animosity towards the front runner in the conservative media than there is amongst voters. And we've seen that again and again in polls. The number of people for whom Romney is the second choice is very high. The number of people who think that he is the only acceptable candidate, very high again in Gallup and in national polls. So I think there's a little bit of a dichotomy that is very easy to lose track of between what many people in the conservative media who are much to Romney's right are saying and thinking and what their feelings are and what actual Republican voters are thinking and saying.
Do you think, though, that it was a sign of trouble for Romney, despite the stats that you just gave, that 39% told the exit pollsters last night that they were not satisfied with the choices that they had on the ballot? Now, 57% said they were, so that's a majority. But if 40% in a party's primary is saying that they're not satisfied with any of the choices, I wonder what that means for eventual enthusiasm and turnout in November.
Well, we'll have to see. And I think the premise really not only by Romney but by all of the candidates has been that the animosity towards Barack Obama is so strong that that will outweigh whatever qualms they have about their own candidate. And it was interesting. I went back and looked at a lot of the speeches, including the convention speech of Ronald Reagan in 1980. And he, too, was thought by many in the party to be, if you remember, too extreme. He was going to take the party down a bad path.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and looked. A lot of Reagan's acceptance speech at the convention and throughout was not a positive Reagan message. It was a negative message directed against Carter. And it did work. Once he crossed that bar of acceptability with the general electorate, the overwhelming animosity, distaste, disfavor that Carter had attracted really overcame, both within the party and the electorate in general, whatever qualms they had about Reagan. And I think the other factor to keep in mind is Obama's approval rating with respect to the economy, the top issues that are concerned. Now, if you see those factors beginning to shift in the president's favor, then I think Romney has a problem. So long as the very, very large percentage of voters, and we're not talking obviously Republican voters, we're talking about the electorate as a whole, disapprove of the president's performance on the top issue. Romney certainly is well positioned to expand that argument. Mm-hmm. Yes, make an affirmative agenda, and I think I wrote a piece yesterday at the Right Turn about what that agenda would look like and how he would fill that out. But I think ultimately reelection campaigns are a referendum on the incumbent, and so long as the economy is not doing very well. We saw CBO predicting that we're going to have 8.7% unemployment through 2014. Romney, I think, is fairly well positioned at this stage in the game. We're not at the end of the primary process by any stretch of the imagination.
It could certainly, I mean, typically, of course, a reelection campaign is a referendum on the incumbent. I think we've seen, though, the difference between, let's say, the Reagan election in 1980 against the unpopular incumbent Jimmy Carter. Reagan was a movement leader. People really, really believed in Ronald Reagan, as you know, as they do to this day. Whereas I'm thinking of 2004, when the Democrats so wanted to get George W. Bush out of office, but they never really got excited about John Kerry, and they didn't quite do it. And so I wonder if Romney risks being sort of the John Kerry of 2012. A lot of Republicans really want to get Barack Obama out of office, but Romney is okay, pretty good, solid. You know, maybe Massachusetts, he's the John Kerry of 2012. I guess that just remains to be seen.
Well, everyone has their favorite year. The other year you can point to is 1992, in which Bill Clinton was certainly not considered to be the top choice among Democrats. A lot of people, just like in 2012, who the party would have preferred, chose not to run. And yet he got into that campaign. In that case, the economy was far better than it is now. And he was able to put together a good campaign, and the incumbent had the problem of turning out his base and getting enthusiasm.
That is a good example on the other side. Clinton just turned out to have so much charisma, I guess. But it's true. A lot of the real liberals in the Democratic base in 1992 were really suspicious of Bill Clinton. Well, you wrote a post today criticizing Gingrich for a graceless, concessionless concession speech last night in Florida. And you mentioned this moment where he quoted Abraham Lincoln,
who said, "We have government of the people, by the people, for the people. And we're going to have people power defeat money power in the next 6 months."
What was so bad about that?
Well, that, and even more so his statement at the end that he's pledging his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor, is part of this grandiosity problem that he has, where he compares himself to historic figures and makes his own plight seem to be on a par with great historical moments. You remember when he was bounced from the ballot in Virginia. He said that that was analogous to Pearl Harbor. You know, he has this capacity, this penchant, for redesigning facts, for redesigning the past and the present in order to make himself into a heroic figure and to minimize his own gaffes and problems and real huge character flaws. I suppose all of us have that capacity, but he just has it in spades. And when he went there, as a number of tweeters, Twitterers said last night, there was this, you know, kind of cringe factor. It's when he compares himself to Edison and Thatcher and Reagan, and when he talks in these grandiose terms. And there is just a complete lack, I think, of personal awareness. Many politicians obviously have this on both sides of the aisle. Let's be frank about this. People who are terribly self-aware tend not to go into politics. I think it's a hindrance rather than a help. But he has it to such a degree that he becomes a farcical candidate and a farcical figure in many ways, and shows himself to be obnoxious in a very real sense. To say that he's pledging his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor is what the Patriots in 1776 said, who really were risking being hanged for treason. That's just a bizarre and wholly inappropriate analogy. He's not putting down his life. And last time I looked, he wasn't spending his own money on this campaign. He was getting other people to spend their fortune.
And I think a lot of the fortune that Romney was spending on TV commercials to demonize Newt Gingrich in Florida were on spots that made him look obnoxious and shifty-eyed and all this stuff that's somewhat subliminal and goes to these character issues. Well, we've been airing the voices of the candidates. Let's take a minute and hear some of the voters, some of them who called in to our Florida special coverage on an exit poll last night.
I voted for Newt. You know, I think he actually believes what he says. He says what he means, and he stands by it.
Mitt Romney, because I think the other option, Gingrich, is really scary for the country. And if Gingrich was to be the nominee for the Republican Party, I would end up voting for Obama.
I voted for Ron Paul. Nobody's even addressed, even mentioned balancing the budget except for him.
I voted for Mitt Romney today. He's obviously the most electable out of this field. I liked Gingrich in the beginning, but I feel like Gingrich really, when the mudslinging started, I feel like he really damaged his own brand, and he went against his conservative values.
Because Newt Gingrich is a liar. He said he's going to change Washington, and Newt Gingrich is Washington. And Mitt Romney is a flip-flopper, therefore I voted for Rick Santorum.
Therefore he voted for Rick Santorum at the end of a montage of Florida voters calling into our special coverage last night, our informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific Florida primary exit poll, after which Mitt Romney spoke at his Tampa headquarters and Gingrich spoke and the others spoke. So let's talk about the voters now, though. Jennifer Rubin, author of a conservative right turn blog for The Washington Post, is still with us. And also joining us, Dante Chinney from Patchwork Nation, watching the election results county by county and demographic by demographic. And listeners, you can see the interactive map that WNYC created to display Dante's analysis. Go to our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Hi, Dante. Welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Now, the states have been pretty different from each other, and I'm curious, what about your county types, like money burbs and service worker centers and immigration nation counties, has remained consistent across the four states that have voted so far?
Well, the big question for me going into Florida, the types have worked very well, except for South Carolina, where things did get a little screwy because Gingrich won everywhere. But so what I wanted to see last night was if kind of what we saw in Iowa and New Hampshire kind of reasserted itself in Florida. Now, Florida's a much more complicated state, but in terms of talking about these wealthier suburban, moneyed burb areas that tend to swing vote in elections. And it did. It really kind of reestablished what we saw in the first two states reestablished itself in Florida last night. And that is to say, Romney really does very well in these wealthy suburban areas. Now, that's really kind of the rationale for his candidacy. His candidacy is vote for me because I'm the guy who can beat Obama in the places that matter. And if you were to look at Florida last night, you would again see it's like, oh, you know, there is something in his. His argument holds. Coming out of South Carolina, things looked very different, but things were kind of shifted back into place last night. He really cleaned up in those suburban areas, and he actually cleaned up with these aging communities we call the emptying nest. He won every one of those counties.
So do you think that bodes badly for Obama for the general election? Because if Romney has this pull in the suburbs, and granted this is only in Republican primaries, so we can only extrapolate so much, but presumably the election is going to be fought in November in places like the suburbs of Philadelphia and the outer suburbs of Washington, D.C. and Virginia and, you know, the suburbs of Denver.
Ohio, suburbs of Cleveland and Detroit. Even.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think, yes, I think this really goes to Romney's, I don't know if it, look, I think the Obama team, I would assume, I mean, look, man, they do analysis far beyond what I do. They know this, all right? We've looked at all this, even in terms of where campaign contributions come from. The footprint of Romney, in terms of where he draws money from, where he draws support from, it looks just like the footprint of Obama, or very similar. So what you have, you would have two different campaigns. Say somehow Gingrich comes back and gets the nomination. That campaign looks entirely different from a Romney-Obama campaign. A Romney-Obama campaign is two guys fighting on the same turf. I do think the one thing that really struck me last night was there's been a lot made about in the results about the North-South divide, about how Gingrich won the North and Romney won the South. And there's obviously, look at the map, there's a good deal of truth to that in Florida, right?
Florida looks a little bit more like New York with ethnic diversity and a lot of transplanted Northeasterners, whereas the North of Florida looks a lot more like the other southern states, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah, the joke in Florida is the further north you go in Florida, the deeper into the south you get.
There you go.
And, you know, there's some truth to that. But I also think it's interesting, when you get down to the middle of the south of Florida, we have these immigration nations. These are places with a lot of immigrants in them, and these evangelical communities. Gingrich won those counties in the south. This is below the R4 corridor. So what do those places have in common? Well, they have a lot of social conservatives and evangelicals. The other thing that's interesting is if you look at a map of median household income in Florida, there is a big circle in the middle of Florida right there, in those counties where people are poorer. These are people that none of those counties has a median household income of above $36,000. And that suggests to me that Romney still has this problem when you combine people who don't make as much money with a stronger conservative background, he really does have a problem with those people. And what does that mean for the general? It's a long time to start forecasting out to the general.
Well, Jennifer, people in that income group tend to vote for Democrats in presidential elections anyway, don't they?
Well, it depends. We've had elections in which that was the case. We've had elections in which the reverse has been the case. I think there were a couple very important points that were just made. One was that, yes, there was this north-south divide, but again, this is within a Republican primary. And the notion that Romney would lose in conservative southern states to Romney in a general election doesn't really carry through. So the critical areas, I think, for Romney are twofold. One in which I think we've seen he has risen to the occasion, and that's in more affluent suburbs, which is important. But the other, and this is a bigger question for him, is in blue-collar industrial states. And we're going to begin to see that in March. Now, Barack Obama, ironically, had the same problem in his primary, and he overcame that. But this is where the Rick Santorum appeal has tried to aim. And if Romney, I think, is going to satisfy those people, the people who we used to call Reagan Democrats, who are now sort of independents or maybe even registered Republicans but vote Democratic, I think he's going to have to develop an agenda and maybe bring on a vice president who can really bolster his numbers with those people, because I don't think actually the race is going to be decided in northern Florida. I think the race is going to be decided in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and
North Carolina, Virginia, Colorado,
exactly.
As usual.
Exactly.
So, looking forward, all four candidates are apparently going to go on. And you mentioned Santorum. I wonder if next Tuesday could be interesting when Missouri votes without Gingrich on the ballot. And I wonder if this will be a meaningful opportunity, in your opinion, Jennifer, for Santorum to make a move, to show what kind of alternative he would be if Gingrich weren't in the way.
Yes, and I have a post up today actually remarking on how does the right wing has kind of screwed themselves up, to be blunt about it, in this primary. Had they backed Santorum from the get-go, who is a guy with some blue-collar appeal, who has a relatively well-thought-out agenda in terms of tax reform and bolstering manufacturing, exactly what actually the president talked about in his State of the Union. And had they not followed Newt Gingrich down this rabbit hole and globbed on to a really unstable, erratic, unacceptable candidate, it is very interesting to think what would have happened over the last few primaries. And now the question becomes, is it too late? Will those people who still aren't quite sold on Romney, will they jump ship? And will they be able to not only jump ship, but pull back some of those Romney supporters and give Rick Santorum a boost and be able to show his wherewithal? I think he's going to have to win someplace. It's getting to be a very long time since he won. And we're talking about Iowa, and he had the very unfortunate circumstances in which he wasn't declared winner until much, much later. And that's just rotten luck, I think, for him.
It's winning in retrospect, which might turn out to be practically winning posthumously.
Yes, exactly.
In
well,
the political sense.
He hopes not. But he's a guy, I think, who has been underestimated. He has been the most effective candidate, actually, of all the people, present and past candidates, in terms of attacking Romney on the issue that many conservatives have a problem with, which is his Massachusetts health care plan. He's a smart guy. He's a good debater. He zeroes in on this issue. And there really is, unlike Newt Gingrich, a contrast on ideology between Santorum and Romney, on the individual mandate, on cap and trade, on TARP, and the list. So he's a more effective, opponent. The question is whether the right has screwed themselves up so badly by throwing their lot in with Gingrich for so long that now Romney has solidified his belief.
So, Dante, Super Tuesday, March 6th, includes a number of southern states where Gingrich or potentially Santorum could do very well, including Gingrich's home state of Georgia, which actually has more delegates than Florida. As we sit here today and talk about Romney's momentum, it has only been four states and very few delegates. Could Super Tuesday change the shape of this race again?
I think, you know, in a word, yeah. I mean, we have to get through February here first, but, you know, look.
Well, do you think on February, since you brought it up, I mean, what we keep hearing in a lot of the political media is, oh, we're going into this downtime right now. There's just going to be some small states, primaries and caucuses, Nevada, Missouri, ho-hum, ho-hum. And there isn't another debate until February 22nd. And so the next thing that really matters is Super Tuesday. Do you think that's wrong?
I do think it's wrong for one very big reason I think is interesting. Well, two, actually. Missouri has a lot of evangelicals. There are a lot of these communities we call evangelical epicenters in Missouri, and I think it's going to be fascinating because if they really turn out strongly for Santorum, it is a sign that they just can't stomach Romney. You know, they just can't stomach him. And the other thing that's interesting to me is Romney in Michigan. Look, everybody has this thought that Romney's just going to go clean up in Michigan, and oh, my gosh, because he's the son of the governor. Romney is not a terribly popular person in Michigan right now. Now, that may not be as true with Republicans, you know, but look, he wrote an editorial saying, let Detroit die. And that wasn't, I still don't understand why
he was against the auto company bailout.
Yeah, I mean, politically, it made absolutely no sense to me. A couple quick points on Santorum. I think he's an interesting guy, but I think that he, you know, look, in terms of winning those suburban areas, he couldn't compare to Romney. He's not going to compare to Romney in winning those places. He's not. I just think it's highly unlikely. His stances on social issues would mean in a general election, I think he'd get clobbered in those places. I really do think that. And, you know, and the other thing is these wealthy suburban areas. It's and what happened in Florida here. Those places, it's true that northern Florida is not going to determine what happens in Florida, but also these great numbers that Romney got out of southern Florida last night, Miami-Dade. Look, he's not, I would find it very unlikely that a Republican candidate is going to win Miami-Dade.
Very interesting. So we are out of time, so we'll have to talk about Super Tuesday, March 6th, a little closer to Super Tuesday, March 6th. We thank Dante Cheney from Patchwork Nation, watching the election results county by county and demographic by demographic. And again, listeners, you can see the interactive map that WNYC created to display Dante's analysis. Go to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. And Jennifer Rubin, author of the conservative Right Turn blog for The Washington Post. Thank you very much. Good to have both of you today, the day after the Florida primary.
It's been a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, why the breast cancer rights establishment is dissing the pro-choice establishment. We'll explain.